Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And as I was just mentioning to Jim before we started, almost every day is Liberal Delusion Day. But the first two martinis in particular, Jim, have heightened that to a new level today. Let's start with the good martini. And we never thought that getting to a runoff in Georgia's 6th congressional district would necessarily be great news for conservatives. But the way things were looking a little bit earlier on Tuesday evening, it is good news. The liberal darling, John Ossoff, did not get to 50% of the vote, which means there will be a runoff. He will be up against former Georgia Secretary of State Republican Karen Handel, who survived the, 11 Republicans in the jungle primary. So the liberals, the media, they really wanted to have this victory. The Hill yesterday was calling a potential Ossoff victory a knockout blow to Trump somehow. Ossoff himself took to the stage a little before midnight and had this curious statement before anybody really knew whether he was going to reach 50% or not.
We may not know the outcome for some time. But let me tell you this. There is no doubt that this is already a victory for the ages.
Jim, June 20th is the runoff here. He hasn't won anything yet except a spot in the runoff. It's a Republican-leaning district, so the edge would go to Handel, although Ossoff did get a higher percentage than a lot of Republicans expected or even hoped for. I'm still glad we're fighting in this one.
I suppose we should say, yeah, you know, getting 48% is, nothing to sneeze at, that Ossoff can feel pretty good about this. And is it, you know, possible he could win the runoff? Yeah, sure, it's possible. But he's probably not going to. And so what began with a Republican-held seat is going to end, and most likely, barring some giant surprise in the June 20th runoff, we're going to get another Republican seat. Did Democrats improve their turnout? Yeah, but not enough to really make it make a difference. Now, obviously, early in the night, obviously, the Democrats did manage to stir up their grassroots. They had cute Alyssa Milano out there, you know, driving people to the polls, and they did get that early vote up great. Unfortunately, they ended up with pretty much about the same performance that Hillary Clinton had in this district in 2016, and fell just short of that 50% threshold. And if they'd won that 50% threshold, then yes, they would be free to strut, and it would be, if not quite a Scott Brown or a Dave Brott level victory, then it would be a really big victory, and they could feel good about themselves. As is, they, you know, got something kind of similar to what happened in the Kansas House race last week. They got higher turnout than usual, but in the end, it's too deep red a district for them to overcome something like that. The other thing which is worth mentioning in all this, look, Republicans should not feel, they should feel maybe some relief this morning. They shouldn't feel fantastic. But they, you know, did have a fairly enormous fundraising advantage in this one. He had more than $8 million Ossoff. Next highest Republican had something about 2 million. You know, when you got a 4-to-1 advantage, you know, not many candidates are going to have an advantage like that. And if it doesn't pan out for you in circumstances like that, you know, it's probably not going to pan out for you. You know, we can see how it shakes out. And you and I have been kind of laughing about all the different ways that, you know, times that folks like Katy Perry would come and, you know, or Bruce Springsteen campaigning for John Kerry in the final days of the 2008 campaign. I saw Samuel L. Jackson was campaigning for doing a radio ad for Ossoff. You know, in the end, I don't know if Hollywood celebrities are really what moves votes anymore, or if it ever did. And that in the end, this can, you know, get some attention for you, but it's just not going to work out that way. But you know, the other thing that kind of came to mind, Greg, is you were reaching these profiles of Ossoff. You reminded all of people like Alison Lundergan Grimes.
Sure.
You know, for those who are like, who? That's the challenger against Mitch McConnell. Who was running for the Texas gubernatorial race, who kept making fun of Abbott for being in a wheelchair?
Abortion Barbie. What was her name?
I mean, you know, how many great red state Democratic hopes have we seen come and go over the years that are, oh, this is the Democrat that can win. Look, they're holding a gun. They're totally different, you know, than look, they wear cowboy boots. You know, maybe you could put Jim Webb in this category. We've seen them come and go year after year, and they very rarely pan out the way
Democrats want. These are red places for a reason. And yes, Trump kind of scrambled the map. He was more competitive in the upper Midwest. This was an Atlanta suburban district that probably wasn't a classic Trump district. As mentioned, he won by about one percentage point and was not very popular in the primary. But in the end, hatred of Trump is probably not going to generate the results that Democrats are hoping for. Again, we'll have to see how the runoff pans out. But if you got 52, unless Republicans remain really splintered after this, the odds are going to favor them and they'll turn out. And everyone who insisted that this was this giant bellwether that will tell us the fate of the 2018 midterms will have to turn around and say, never mind. Nothing to be learned from it.
Yeah, they're 0-2 on bellwethers. They thought they had a shot in Kansas 4, and they thought Ossoff had a chance to win Georgia 6 outright last night, and we'll see what happens in June. Wendy Davis is the name we're looking for in Texas, and she didn't even get to 40%, as I recall.
Yeah, the hype-to-performance ratio on these great red state Democratic hopes tends to be pretty bad. It is also worth noting, sometimes you can see these candidates kind of get plugged in or locked into a certain kind of rhetoric that just doesn't translate everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This morning, Ossoff was talking about how great it was to have the support of so many women in his grassroots movement. He's running against Karen Handel, a woman. I don't know about you, Greg, but I'm with her. Hashtag, I'm with her.
Very good.
Nevertheless, she persisted.
Oh, it's good to turn that around. All right, on to our bad martini now, and it truly, truly is bad. This news broke yesterday afternoon. It actually happened Tuesday morning, local time out in Fresno, California. Here's the Los Angeles Times story. Corey Ali Muhammad told his family there was a war going on between blacks and whites in America. On social media, he referred to white people as devils. Earlier in the year, he released a rap album replete with violent, explicit, racially charged lyrics, including referring to himself in one song as a black soldier. On Tuesday morning, police say Muhammad stalked the streets of downtown Fresno, fatally shooting three white men with a .357 revolver. Before surrendering to police, he allegedly shouted Allahu Akbar and expressed hatred toward white people and the government, according to Fresno Police Chief Jerry Dyer. Jim, you and I have recovered enough of these shootings where that particular phrase is shouted to know that that usually means something, but apparently not to Chief Dyer in Fresno. Here's what he had to say.
We do not believe, based on the information we have today, that this is a terrorist-related crime. Based on the information that we have been provided and our investigation has shown, is that this is solely based on race.
CNN video with the music there. Jim, so I don't know what it takes to convince people that this is what it was, but I guess now it's more important to talk about race than it is to talk about the giant elephant in the room.
Let me be clear. This was not terrorism. He just wanted to kill as many people as possible who looked different from him. So everyone can relax. Everyone can rest assured. Wait, what? Like this? It's not terrorism. He's just trying to kill you. Oh, okay. That makes me feel a whole lot better. Look, at this point, it starts every time you hear about a lone wolf terrorist, and they keep saying, well, it's terrorism, but it's not terrorism. Or, it's not real terrorism. It's diet terrorism. It's terrorism zero. We suddenly get very fine-tuned in our definitions of these things, all in the effort to emphasize, look, just because he was running around trying to kill people and screaming the same thing that guys at ISIS do, it doesn't mean he's terrorist. Look, at some point, it's starting to quack like a duck. It's starting to walk like a duck. And it tastes really good at Chinese restaurants, okay? I mean, that's, at some point you start saying, hey, you know what? That's a duck. This guy sure as hell acts like a terrorist. And the other thing which is worth noting, you mentioned his battle cry or whatever you want to call it, Greg. I can't help but notice, I think it was the Associated Press or someone who tweeted out, he shouted, God is great.
Right.
Well, not quite. I mean, did he yell something that translates to God is great? Sure. But most people would say, oh, God is great. No. It was the same cry that all the Islamist jihadists use. And from that, people might get the conclusion of this. He's shooting people yelling Allah Akbar. We're 100% sure it's just based on racial animosity? We're sure? Really? Okay. All right. Whatever you say, Chief.
Literally. Oh, man. Yeah. And look at the amount of attention this story is getting compared to some other stories in recent years. Jim, let's move on to the crazy.
No, there's a terrible shooting. We need gun control. What? He said what? Never mind. Local crime story.
That's right. Exactly right. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And we had talked in the past, pretty recently, a couple weeks ago, about how Fox News was banging its head against the desk, figuratively speaking, over trying to settle more sexual harassment claims against Bill O'Reilly, something to the tune of, I think it was like $13 million over five different cases. And then there was this Wendy Walsh who decided to go public instead of looking for money and all sorts of other things. This attorney that represents Walsh, Lisa Bloom, saying on CNN last night she's got all sorts of other women who are ready to come forward if Fox doesn't get rid of O'Reilly. O'Reilly went on this quote-unquote vacation recently, and he's set to come back Monday. But now we're hearing reports, Jim, that he might not be coming back at all. There were reports Tuesday night in the Wall Street Journal, which, by the way, is owned by the same company that owns Fox News, that the network was preparing to cut ties with O'Reilly. CNN reporting that the two sides were in talks for a separation, while New York Magazine reported that the Murdochs, the family which owns Fox News, were leaning toward announcing that O'Reilly will not return to the air. And so Fox News had been saying all along that he is coming back Monday. Now they're not answering the question. So it looks like, based on the fact that the Wall Street Journal is reporting on this, that a settlement and an end here might be in sight. Your question leading into our planning for this morning was, so what number of sexual harassment claim does it take? So does Fox News learn the lesson here, or is it just about advertising dollars?
It seems like a really fair question. And I say this as generally a fan of Fox News, some programs more than others. And just kind of observe, like, are there cases of false accusations in the realm of sexual harassment? Sure. Are there cases where people will settle lawsuits to make the legal claims go away because they don't want to run up legal bills? Sure. But, five payouts, $13 million. Greg, what number is the one where the network says, okay, that's enough? Was it number five, four? Apparently, it seems like it was number five. And $13 million, like, I don't know about you, Greg, but I at that point, you feel not so bad about asking for a raise, right? I mean, think about it. If Bill O'Reilly has cost his employer more money than you and I will probably make in our careers, right, and that most people will make in their entire careers, just in settling harassment claims. Now people would say, point out, he makes a bazillion dollars in advertising every time he writes one of his new killing Lincoln, killing Reagan, killing MSNBC, killing my own career with sexual harassment. All those books have done really, really well. And I suppose it, like, I just, you'd kind of figure also, like, maybe after the third one, you'd treat people a little more carefully. Right? Also, by the way, some of these claims, now look, we don't know whether they haven't been verified. It's he said, she said, but some of them are really, really uncouth behavior, shall we say. Really, these are not, oh, you look nice today and somebody took it the wrong way. They really indicate a vulgar Animal House-like atmosphere at Fox News, which you and I have talked about in previous times, which is, I know they don't tolerate it in National Review, and I got a feeling they don't tolerate it at Radio America. Nope. So you kind of wonder just what the attitude is. Is at some point, if you have enough wealth and power and celebrity status, you feel like the rules don't apply to you? I don't know, but it's unnerving. And the idea that this kind of behavior and attitude has been going on for so long in an otherwise pretty respected news institution is unnerving, and I think that's why it's warranted our crazy martini today.
Yeah, certainly. You know who hasn't weighed in yet, Jim? The folks.
Ha!
That's O'Reilly's term. If you don't watch O'Reilly.
The word is, apparently by the end of the week, we may get a statement from Fox News. I understand O'Reilly's request was that they keep it pithy. You know what, Greg, should you have the last word, or should I have the last word on this one?
You do it.
All right, falafel. Google it. Google Bill O'Reilly falafel. You'll get the reference there.
I'm fully familiar with that reference. The only other thing I want to say is, we'll do it live. If you don't know what that means, go to YouTube.
Farewell, Bill.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.